Okay, well, thank you for the invitation to speak here. It's been a lovely conference so far. I enjoyed it. So this is some work in progress with my student, Elliot Schneider. Apologies to Edward, I guess you heard the same talk 2 weeks ago. So, okay, so this is kind of the outline of what I want to tell you about. I want to try to find an example where ER equals EPR, the relation between, you know, the two entangled black holes and the connected geometry looks like a string duality, so something like a microscopic description of ER equals EPR. And I'll start with, well, I'll have some detour about how we actually define Lorentzian string theory from analytic continuation from Euclidean string theory that will be important to seeing how this can work. And then I'll give you some example related to this old FCZ duality, Fedayev-Zamolodchikov-Zamolodchikov duality. That won't really be a perfect example for what I wanted. And then I have some new conjecture duality. So this is work in progress. So if you find a fatal flaw in it, let me know. Okay, so I think in this audience, I don't need to tell you what this means. Tangled systems can be described as being connected by a non-traversable wormhole. But one puzzling aspect of this story is that, you know, if geometry is encoded by entanglement, then it can't be described by a linear operator. Many people made this observation in many different ways. You know, if we have two factorized microsites, that's dual, surely, to two factorized and disconnected bulk with no wormhole connecting them, but then if we take a linear combination of them, we suddenly draw this picture, and that doesn't seem to agree with the linearity of quantum mechanics. But, well, instead of saying that quantum mechanics is modified, maybe a better way of understanding it is that just suggest that the number of components of spacetime, for example, it isn't an invariant property of quantum gravity. And of course, in string theory, it's familiar that the geometric features aren't duality invariant. So maybe that's what this is supposed to be. Is there some kind of string duality which, between, on the one hand, the connected eternal black hole spacetime as the target space, and on the other hand, some kind of string theory defined a string perturbation theory around the entangled sum of disconnected target spaces? So can we find the duality like that? So of course, one side of this is familiar. We have the eternal black hole. Well, I'll mostly focus on two examples which have exact world shape descriptions, the 2D linear dilaton black hole and the BTZ black hole at the PRNS point. Well, actually, I'll just talk about the bosonic string. So, but if you wanted to promote it to the superstring, that's what it would be. And these are described by, well, the first one, this 2D thing, by the SL2R mod UN coset. And the second thing, as you probably know, the SL2R manifold looks like ADS3. So if we have the SL2R WZW model, that's like the ADS3. That's the world sheet theory of ADS3 with the Nevers-Schwartz B field. We're here again, I'll really just talk about the bosonic string, but this SL2R WZW model, and then BTZ is just a quotient of ADS3, so we have some Z orbit fault. So that's a perfectly simple world sheet theory that was studied a lot in the past. And in Lorentz signature, the target space has two asymptotic regions. It's the eternal black hole connected by the wormhole. But the other side of this duality sounds much less familiar as a string theory. What would I even mean by studying string perturbation theory around the thermofield double state of some disconnected microstate geometries? That's not something that at least I usually thought we could do or that we talk about very often. Now, so I think we often say or think of string perturbation theory as something we do around the classical Lorentzian background. Classical in the G-string sense, but that's not really right. So first of all, that we can't always do that. So if we have time-dependent backgrounds, we don't know how to do string perturbation theory around them in general. And one of the reasons why, I think in a sense the main one, is there isn't a unique choice of state from the target space point of view. So if we have a time-dependent background, there's no canonical choice of state or vacuum there's particle creation. So how is the choice of state in the target space even encoded on the world sheet? So unless one has a way to encode it, it's clear that you're not doing something right. On the other hand, there are some things that we can do that are more than just string perturbation theory around some classical background. So there's some thermal string theory. So we can talk about perturbation theory around the thermal field double state, for instance, of light strings in two disconnected copies of ADS, for instance. So like the gas of strings in two copies of ADS. And I'll explain what that world sheet theory is, but I think that was, people have talked about that kind of thing for a long time. Now, let me make a little detour to explain a little more clearly what I mean, because otherwise the rest of the talk won't make much, it will make even less sense. So usually we think, imagine we have Lorentzian string theory, we usually define it by analytic continuation from some theory with the world sheet theory with Euclidean target. And the way it works is slightly different in asymptotically flat space or in ADS space-time, so I really want to talk about the ADS version of this. So let me start by thinking about a nonlinear sigma model. So in space-time, forget string theory, in space-time, how will we describe a state in Lorentzian evolution? Well, one way to do it is we prepare a state by doing Euclidean path integral, and then we want to compute boundary correlation functions, and we'll use Schwinger-Keldysh contours. So this is a piece, this piece here in Euclidean time represents this Euclidean cap. Then we have a Lorentzian excursion, then we come back, and then we glue the cap. And then if I insert some up boundary operators along this upward bit, that's the usual time-ordered correlators, for instance. Now, if we were doing world sheet string theory, the Schwinger-Keldysh contour is a contour in field space, because the coordinate here, t, is one of the fields on the world sheet, and it's kind of clear that we needed to pick some such a contour in complexified field space to begin with, because if you wrote down the Lorentzian world sheet action, it's not bounded from below. The time coordinate has a wrong sign kinetic term. So you're supposed to complexify the field space, that is, the target space, and pick a good contour. But actually, in this kind of contour, the Lorentzian excursion is contractible, so it doesn't change the answer of doing the path integral along this. We could have just did the Euclidean bit. So in that sense, the theory is really defined by the Euclidean target description, that is, this contour, and then you just analytically continue the answer. Okay, so that was maybe a bit long-winded, but I think it's good to have this picture in mind. And in ADS in particular, the right definition is that you're supposed to compute amplitudes of vertex operators of the Euclidean theory. They're labeled by points on the boundary, which is the correct analog of the scattering matrix, and then you analytically continue the answer in the boundary argument. So I'll say it again in various ways. Okay, so a main example today is this ADS3 string theory. So it's if you look at the SL2RWZW model at level k, well, first of all, the manifold SL2R matrix you can write like this. So you can check that the condition that the determinant is 1 is this condition, which is the embedding of ADS3 and as a hyperboloid. And the WZW action, it takes this form and it has the Wessimino term, which tells you that you don't just have this target geometry, you also have a B field, which takes this form. And the kind of standard object, the thing that would look standard from the point of view of ADS-CFT to compute, are the scattering amplitudes of short strings, and they look like boundary correlators. And we should really think that they're just defined by continuation from the Euclidean theory, because we had to pick a good contour to do the path integral, otherwise we didn't know what it meant. Now, the Euclidean theory is SL2 C mod SU2 coset. So again, if we look at this matrix, if we impose the condition that it's an element of this coset, then we get exactly Euclidean ADS3. It being in the coset means that the matrix is also Hermitian. So now, This is a very fast review because this is old stuff. You know, if I spent an hour talking, reviewing this, we won't say anything new. But the vertex operators that are natural to construct are labeled by Casimir of SL2. They have world sheet weight that's determined by that Casimir. K is the level and this parameter J here. And if J is a real number, that's a certain branch. These things have negative weight, and then you can make a weight one-to-one vertex operator by attaching to it something from the internal CFT. So, in other words, pure ADS3 doesn't have dimension 26 if we were doing the bosonic string, or 10 if we took the supersymmetric version of this Kolsa theory. We have to have some internal manifold or some internal CFT to get the correct total central charge, and then it will also have some vertex operators that combine with these guys to make the fields and ADS. Now, in terms of the world sheet coordinates, so semi-classically in the world sheet or alpha prime sense, or here that means large K, this vertex operator takes some form like this. This is just a mode function in ADS3. So that's the usual in string theory. The vertex operators in the semi-classical limit look like just mode, solutions of the wave equation with appropriate mass and in the target space. And here the mass is determined by this parameter. Yes, so the ADS3 coordinates, are R, X, and X. I had R, X, and T, but here I wrote something that indeed looks slightly. Yeah, I put the wrong symbol here, so, sorry. So, this looked like world sheet, when I wrote this, this was supposed to be the world sheet coordinate, but I put the wrong thing here. So what I meant was, the X is a label, and then the fields are R and, say, Z and Z bar. And so we have label, this, which is a number, minus Z, which is the field, X bar minus Z bar, which is the field, R and R. X is a boundary point, and C bar, and R are the world sheet fields. But I shouldn't have put this there. I should have called this something else. This was supposed to be the point in two dimensions of which this, this, and that are functions of that. So it was a typo on the formula. Sorry. Okay, and so these things also have dimension 2J with respect to the dual CFT2. That lives on the boundary of ADS3. Okay, so this is the Euclidean formula, and then if you want to go to talk about Lorentzian correlators, you just analytically continue in this argument X. So you take the Euclidean time in X and make it in your Wick rotator. Now, this story is also more general than just the computing the vacuum ADS3 correlation functions. If I wanted to prepare some more exotic state, I could discuss the Euclidean theory deformed by vertex operators which look like this somewhere in Euclidean time section. That will produce a different state, and then when I analytically continue to Lorentz symmetry, it will look like perturbation theory around a state produced by the Euclidean path integral with those sources. Now that might not be exactly solvable depending on what sources I turn on, but that's in principle the correct description. Okay, now we can go to a slightly more interesting case, the string here in the BTZ black hole. So in Lorentz signature, you will think of the BTZ black hole that looks like an orbit fold of ADS3. So we take an orbit fold of the SL2R WZW model by the thing that looks like spatial translation in Rindler coordinates. So we write ADS3 as in Rindler coordinates. It has two Rindler wedges, and then we quotient by the translations there, which look infinite. After you quotient it, they look finite. That's the compact or the global BTZ. So, for instance, it acts on the SL2R generator by this transformation, where sigma 3 it generates one of the hyperbolic that it's non-compact directions in SL2R, and that's the same thing on both sides. Tells us that it's the space-like one, and not the time translation combination. In general, in this game, there's an SL2R times SL2R symmetry, and the diagonal part, so for a given generator of SL2R, if I have, I can have a diagonal and an anti-diagonal one with the same generator, and they will correspond to translations in space in some coordinates and translations in the commuting time. That's the typical description of that. So, okay, but again, we should really have thought of defining it from the Euclidean theory. So we take the Euclidean 83 quotient it by a Z orbifold as well, and then analytically continue along some reflection transformation, which is the one which glued the torus to the top of the torus here. So the cut here is the fixed locus of this Z2, and that's what defines the analytic continuation of this to that. Now, in this case, in Lorentz signature, there are also normalizable mode vertex operators, which correspond to states, as always in Lorentzian theory. But now those aren't simply related by the boundary state operator correspondence to the objects that look like local operator insertions, so one would have to study them independently. And indeed, the spectrum in BTZ is continuous, and it's not related to the spectrum of the local operator dimensions of the boundary theory, of course. But I'm not going to ask questions about the states in Lorentz signature. We really want to compute some correlation function. That's simpler. So that's what we'll do for now, anyway. And now we come to the last example, which is just the Thermofield double state and two copies of ADS. So imagine we're below the Hawking page transition. So that would be the then it would be the dominant piece of the thermal ensemble. If we're above it, we could still consider it, at least up to some temperature. And that's just a different analytic continuation of the same Euclidean orbifold. So you take the same thing, which again looks like a Euclidean solid torus topologically, and now we analytically continue it in a different way. We cut it along this Z2 involution, the one that reflects along this plane, and analytically continue, but now the Euclidean time direction never shrinks. It's this circle. Since it's not contractible, when we do this cut and do the analytic continuation, we just get two disconnected pieces of the target. But we're in a non-trivial state. So that's the point which is a little bit subtle. So if you just looked at the Lorentzian target space as a manifold, you would say it's just two copies of ADS3. So are we doing the vacuum state, but this is supposed to produce the Thermofield double state, right? Now the point is that when we defined our Lorentzian string theory, if I said that the target space is two copies of ADS3, I didn't tell you everything, because in order to define the theory, I had to first complexify the field space and give you a good contour. But if I have two copies of ADS3, if I complexify the target space, there's a choice. I can make the Euclidean thing disconnected or connected with any length beta over 2 that I like. So it's a new parameter in the complexification of the target space that I didn't have in the original Lorentzian section, but I need that to define the theory. So if I choose different lengths here, I get a different state. And indeed, it's kind of obvious that if I follow this procedure, so it's trivial that I will just end up getting the thermal correlators in the thermofield double state of these boundary insertions. So it's kind of obvious. Now, an important point is that it's important that we continued the two coordinates that I called x, which includes space and tau, from the Euclidean guy, which labeled by a point on the boundary of this boundary T2. And roughly speaking, that's just given by the method of images in Euclidean signature, right? That's the thing that will look like a local insertion on the boundary, which is invariant under this orbifold. If we thought about it naively in Lorentz signature, you would say in Lorentz signature that we're doing a strange orbifold of the SL2R WZW model by an imaginary, you know, I times the generator associated to time translation, or if you compute the contribution of the two weights.
Sorry, what does tau L minus tau T mean?
It's supposed to be R. So, That's supposed to be the winding operator. Wow, I don't know how I typed two there. Right, so when we analytically continue this, if we didn't have this term, then it would be completely straightforward. It would just be thermal string theory, or the thermofield double state, in two copies of the spacetime you get by putting a minus sign here. In other words, just the linear dilaton and a time direction. This operator looks like this winding operator. So this, the main thing is, what's the Lorentzian continuation of that? That was explained very briefly in the previous slide, but I want to go through it in detail in this case. Now, ultimately, this won't actually be a perfect example for what we want, for various reasons that are indirectly related to the fact that it's asymptotically linear dilaton and not asymptotically ADS. Well, very indirectly related. And I'll give you another conjecture later that I think it's more in the spirit of what I wanted. But maybe it's good to have this example in mind for now so that the discussion doesn't get too abstract, so I can explain what this slide is supposed to mean. So first, let me briefly review this FCC duality. So first of all, at large R and large rho, the two models just look the same. And on the other hand, in the cigar, the strings never get to the very strong coupling region because the cigar geometry ends. On the other hand, in Sine-Liouville theory, it turns out that the potential, although it doesn't look positive, it has varying sign, but it ends up reflecting strings away from the strong coupling region. So that part agrees that qualitatively. And the cigar description is good or weakly coupled at large k, and the Sine-Liouville model is weakly coupled if k minus 2 is small. So it's some kind of strong weak duality. And the thing that one computes here is scattering amplitudes of vertex operators which have the same labels, because this is, after all, a quotient of the SL2R WCW model. They're labeled by this Casimir and two momenta, or two other quantum numbers. And in this case, the physically relevant representations of SL2R are the ones where J is a half plus IS, this complex branch. Okay, so when I discuss the Lorentzian interpretation of this time-winding operator, it only really makes sense when that's a perturbation. So I told you what it means to insert one of them on top of something that already makes sense. Unfortunately, well, this is related to why this example isn't sort of the perfect one, but just use it as a first step. In Sine-Liouville theory, the coupling in front of this term isn't really coupling because I can change its value by shifting rho by a constant. That has the effect of changing the value of the dilaton, but from the point of view of the roll sheet CFT, it's the same theory. And moreover, if I compute scattering amplitudes, they don't look like Taylor expansions in lambda. That's sort of true for an obvious reason, because you're looking at scattering states that come in and out from the weakly coupled region, and a reflecting wall is never a small perturbation. So it's not really a perturbation. On the other hand, when the level of this SL2R WZW is smaller than 3, then we can think of it as a deformation of something else. So in this case, there's an exactly marginal deformation of Liouville times the compact boson to sine Liouville. So imagine to this action, we also add ordinary Liouville. So just e to the minus gamma rho, where gamma is appropriate to make it a weight 1-1 operator. Now the relative coefficient of this term and the Liouville term is meaningful. That's the exactly marginal direction of this conformal family. It only exists in this low k range. So in this case, you could, in principle, start with Liouville times the compact boson, add the sine Liouville term as a perturbation, and do conformal perturbation theory and its coupling. That would make sense in principle, and then we could think about continuing that story to Lorentz signature in the way that I describe here. But that will turn out to not be exactly the regime we want to be in, so that's why this example isn't perfect. And actually, in this, so for a special value of k, this is just this equals one string theory. You don't need any internal manifold, it's just Liouville times time has c equals 26. And then the Lorentzian construction I'm going to describe looks like the description of Wilson lines in the adjoint representation of the dual matrix model of the c equals one string, which is studied especially in this paper. Okay, so what's the idea? Again, this is sort of another restatement of the slide that I showed you before. So now we're in a slightly different situation. So the winding number is conserved in the original model, and now we want to insert some winding, add this winding operator to the action. So imagine we expand out the action as an exponential, we get something like this. We always have to have equal number of positive and negative windings of plus one and minus one, otherwise the amplitude just vanishes, because in the original theory, winding was conserved. Original theory here is Liouville times the compact boson. These are some ordinary vertex operators, continue to Lorentz signature. And then this is the gadget we want to understand. So let's start with just the term with k equals 1. So that has two insertions, so winding and anti-winding. And now we play this same game as in the previous picture that wasn't perhaps very clear. So we take this sphere diagram and map it to a cylinder where W plus is here and W minus is here. And now we want to replace this operator with its semi-classical description. The idea is just to get an understanding of what it means in Lorentz signature. The computational rule is that you compute everything in Euclidean signature and continue the answer. That's not very satisfying, perhaps, because it just tells you an answer. So what I'm trying to do is explain what is that answer telling you. So semi-classically, we replace W plus and W minus with some asymptotics of the world sheet fields and the two ends of the cylinder. And now we think of this direction that I call S as time, and this one is like space. So the Euclidean time field has winding one around this direction. So that will lead to an interesting interpretation when we continue it. But this picture is already good because it looks a little bit like a trace, because this is like the time direction. Okay, so first of all, what are the asymptotic conditions here? So this particular vertex operator that we're talking about, we think of it like a defect operator. It says that the tau field winds once, and the radial guy has a particular asymptotic that looks like this. That would be in the plane. When we go to the cylinder, we get an extra contribution from the background charge because we had a linear dilaton. You can think of this asymptotic as defining this operator, or you could drive it by looking at OP of two such vertex operators and differentiating in order to get the OP, it's perhaps not appropriate terminology, but the if I take this field, which is not the good primary operator, and approach it to this operator, then I get a piece which looks like this operator times this function of C, which is not a power law because this is not a primary. It's like a logarithmic field. As always, it's one of the target space coordinate fields. Okay, so now we wanted to analytically continue the theory, so we continue the target space by going to the Schwinger-Keldysh contour. And now the asymptotic conditions of the world sheet fields at the insertion of this winding operator still, we just analytically continue them. And they say that the string comes in and out from infinity, because rho went out to infinity as we zoom into this operator, so the string comes in and out from infinity in rho. And the fact that there was winding one tells us something about the state on the string. So it gives the Euclidean world sheet that defined the state on some pair of such strings. So let me draw the picture here. So here is our sphere diagram. I cut it in half. Here was the winding insertion. So if I put the top end, it was just the Euclidean picture. Now I imagine cutting here. The reason why I'm cutting the world sheet picture here is because that's cutting the target space time coordinate, because I'm working in a gauge, this S equals tau and the target. So when I analytically continue the target, I should cut this picture.
You're not continuing the world sheet.
No. So on this side I have, so this piece looks like a folded string in one half of my spacetime. This is a folded string in the other half. And the full diagram tells me that I'm doing a computation in the thermofield double state on these two pairs of folded strands. Incidentally, if we'd had this whole picture in just in CFT, if we weren't doing string theory, it wouldn't look like a trace, so we wouldn't really have this interpretation, because if you computed the, so if I defined the CFT problem where I had this particular boundary conditions on the endpoints, and I tried to compute the trace, I will sum over all windings in this direction. So this will be a piece of the trace, but it won't look like a trace, so it won't really have a simple Lorentzian interpretation. But in string theory, we're supposed to integrate over the choices of coordinates, or we integrate over the metric, so we needed to fix the gauge. If we fix the gauge like this, it looks like a trace in this particular gauge-fixed Hilbert space. Okay, so that's the story there. Now, in principle, this gives us a Lorentzian interpretation of this version of the FCC duality where we can treat the Sine-Liouville term actually as a deformation. And it's a condensate of these folded entangled strings. But the trouble is that when k is less than 3, where this would really work, the string endpoints actually go out to the weakly coupled boundary, because if you compute this number when k is less than 3, it's negative. So it goes, the strings don't look like they come in and out from the horizon or the place where the horizon was, they come in and out from weak coupling. So it's really boundary deformation, and maybe the dual isn't in the black hole regime there anyhow. So perhaps one could make it work even when k is not less than 3, but then you will be adding the deformation to the pure linear dilaton, and it won't, the answers of the usual scattering amplitudes won't look perturbative in this parameter, so it's not really clear whether thinking of it in this perturbative way makes any sense. So instead, let me try to come up with a different example, which is maybe also more interesting or more geared toward ADS. So we want to do something similar for the BTZ black hole instead of the 2D linear dilaton guy. I don't have much time, so I think I have to say this very quickly. I mentioned we take the Euclidean AU3 in Poincaré coordinates, and then we perform a Z by times Z orbifold to make the boundary look like a T2. Actually, the one we did on the spatial direction doesn't matter too much, so we can just think about compactifying the time direction. So that's some other orbifold of the SL2R theory. If we didn't do the spatial orbifold, let's forget about that. Then if I analytically continue to Lorentz signature, it would look like the thermal field double state in two copies of the Poincaré patch, instead of the usual Euclidean vacuum restricted to the Poincaré patch. So it's just like thermal string theory in the Poincaré patch, not surprisingly. Now, let me just skip this because I don't have enough time. So imagine, so now we can try to do the same game. So the theory, the target space has this cusp. We can try to deform it by a string which winds the Euclidean time direction. And if we find a weight 1-1 winding operator of that type and we add it to the action, maybe it has the effect of converting it back to Euclidean BTZ. So we can take some operator of this type. It has zero momentum along the two Poincaré patch translation directions. Actually, it turns out that, well, it's not completely precise, but since I don't have any time, let me say it like that. This winding piece doesn't change the weight of the operator at all. That's roughly speaking because the circle shrinks to zero size, so it doesn't actually cost anything to wrap this circle. And we can start with some weight 1-1 operator of the SL2R theory. For instance, this interesting operator that sometimes people call the I operator, which has a particular fall off, and add to it this winding of 1, and now I get a weight 1-1 winding operator. Actually, I could also add to it winding of 2 and 3, and they will all have the same. They'll all be marginal. And now imagine we deform the theory by this operator. So the symmetries all match, winding isn't conserved anymore, all the other symmetries are the same. the same between this cusp theory deformed by a winding condensate and the Euclidean BTZ. Moreover, the deformation, because this fall off is small in the ADS asymptotic region, and it gives you some potential that grows in the interior that can reflect strings away. So it sounds plausible to think that you will end up with the Euclidean BTZ model. Actually, it's kind of similar to the idea of condensing winding tapions to cap off, here it caps off this infinite cusp region. Well, these don't exactly look like tachyons in spacetime because you could construct these operators so that they have zero frequency and zero momentum, but it's otherwise similar. Perhaps if we took another direction to be time, then we could think of it as a tachyon in the sense of a different direction being interpreted as the time direction. So what's the Lorentzian version? Well, indeed, now it looks like the picture we wanted. So this cusp theory if we computed an amplitude in this cusp theory with insertion of winding and anti-winding vertex operator of this type, the Lorentzian picture looks like I have two copies of the Poincaré patch, and then I have some string that comes in and out from the Poincaré horizon. And that particular, if I have the amplitude of that pair of vertex operators, it prepares these two strings in the thermofield, their own thermofield double state. And then if I added this action operator to the action, it means I have a condensate of such strings. So I have many such pairs of entangled strings which come in and out from the horizon, which sounds a lot like this picture of Susskind and Uglum of counting entropy by strings across the horizon. So that's the basic idea, and I also think I'm out of time. So what's the idea? So first of all, this is supposed to be some CFT duality, which is similar to FCZ duality between the Euclidean BTZ theory and some singular orbifold of the SL2R, singular in the sense that it has this cusp region deformed by winding operators. And its Lorentzian interpretation would be a duality between the eternal BTZ, or even ADS Rindler, if we didn't compactify the angle direction, and a pair of disconnected asymptotically ADS, should have said asymptotically ADS spacetimes with some cusps in the interior, or in the other case, just two copies of the Poincaré patch, in a thermally entangled state, together with a condensate of these entangled strings that stretch in and out from the throat. So the idea is that that strings would see these two configurations as the same. Well, this is an easy description of it, and this is sounds like a hard description, but I think it's interesting that to have such a duality because, in this description, it's manifest that the target space looks disconnected. So that's really the main point. Now, I think I still have a lot of work to do here. While I would like to make more checks of this Euclidean version of the duality, the thing I presented toward the end, is it really correct? It would be good to promote perhaps the whole story to the superstring. And then maybe there are some things that we can learn from this, like does it teach us anything about the counting of microstates? That would be very interesting if it did. I'm not quite sure how to get that out of it yet. Or even more fancy, suppose I really understood this whole story, I'm not there yet, and then we made a setup like the traversable wormhole one, how would it be described in the Lorentzian disconnected picture, for instance? So is there something about these strings that come in and out from the horizon which enables the particle to get from one side to another in some causal way in this string theory description? So that would be extremely interesting, but of course I'm nowhere near that. So thanks for listening.
Okay, so we have 15 minutes for discussion. Yes.
One or two clarifications. This cusp theory, is it same as Poincaré patch with both boundary coordinates on it identified? Like
exactly.
Poincaré patch on
exactly.
Torus.
Yeah, yeah.
So as you said, this the many things I didn't quite catch. One of which is the time circle is already shrinkable in this thing. Because it goes to zero size.
It goes to zero size, but, well.
Well, at least it's not clear that winding is conserved here. So why do you need additional winding condensates on top of this?
I think winding is conserved here. Suppose you T-dualize the circle, then the interior region, so I actually had a slide about it, which I skipped. So if I T-dualize, I get something that looks like this. And then in the interior region, this direction just looks big again, right? So it would sound, so and then winding turns into energy. So it would sound funny that energy isn't conserved in this space-time. Why would the energy dual to this tau not be conserved?
So if it's the Euclidean time circle, which is shrinking down to zero size in the cusp,
right,
then fermions are anti-periodic around it, and winding strings become tachyonic.
Yes,
circles,
yes.
And that's just the regime where Eva showed that you know, you have this, the instability probably causes the circle to pinch off. So this is supporting the idea that it may not be conserved after you have the tachyon instability. So what role does the tachyon instability play in your description?
Wouldn't you describe the tachyon instability as saying that you deformed the theory by the tachyon?
There were various arguments to indicate that the endpoint of this winding string tachyon instability was another sort of semi-classical geometry where the circle just smoothly capped off.
Right. That's good, right?
It is good, but it almost makes it sound like a more direct connection to the black hole geometry.
When you say it's a tachyon, what do you mean exactly?
It's the usual winding mode of the string, you know, becomes, in the simplest case, of course, is just the cylinder, and you look at the spectrum.
No, I understand, but I mean like. I guess you mean you. You want a string with both winding and non-zero energy, or, it's a tachyon in the target space sense that it leads to time-dependent solution, right? But maybe that's more direct in some sense, but also sounds more, That sounds like a description of what would dynamically happen if I started with the funny configuration, but I wanted to describe something more in the form of a static duality. So if you're in the theory which was this cusp together with the condensate, you wouldn't have this tachyon because it just would equal the other theory from the beginning. It's just like an alternative description of the black hole. So I wasn't really interested in the cusp theory without the deformation itself. It was meant to just be a. Does that answer or?
You keep saying that this is a singular orbifold. Does that mean you can control it or not?
I just meant that the geometry looks singular because of header.
But as a conformal field theory, is it well defined?
It's fine, I think, yeah.
Have people done calculations with it?
Well, it's just an orbifold of the SL2R model.
But it's got some sort of, I mean, it looks a bit singular because it's got this infinite throat and
it looks a little
continuum.
Singular, but
okay. The more general question was, I mean, you could also have thought of just thermal ADS and a condensate around that, right?
Mm-hmm.
To make your black hole.
Okay.
You could have thought, I'm maybe it's technically harder to control.
Just global ADS.
Just global ADS. Let's go to Euclidean space. Euclidean mm-hmm. space, you've got the non-contractible cycle.
In thermal ADS, yeah.
Yes. Now you could have, you could imagine a configuration which was winding modes around this thermal direction. So morally speaking, if you went a high enough temperature when the tachyon was triggered, that's what would happen, right? This cycle would develop a tachyon which would pinch off the circle and become the black hole. So you could have thought of this black hole as a condensate of winding around this less singular configuration. I was wondering why this did not play a role in your discussion.
Maybe that would also work, but I'm not sure if in that case you'll find the weight one a simple winding operator to deform, but I mean the Euclidean time cycle never gets very small in this setup, right?
But we could take it to the Hagedorn temperature. At that point, it would get very small.
But there you have to dial yourself to this temperature on the boundary, right?
Right.
So you'll produce the black hole in some funny regime, perhaps.
Right. So you could produce a black hole by a flow down at or above that temperature, and then you can try to continue that configuration back to earlier temperatures. I'm not sure if any of this is practical.
Okay, I see. That's an interesting idea, yeah.
Okay.
So I think my question is sort of related to what Shiraz has been saying, but it's also about Gary's interpretation. So couldn't it be the same interpretation that the rolling down of the tachyon has produced the condensate, and that there's a description if you insist on staying in this Poincaré patch Poincaré patch perspective, that the condensate you've produced is the rolling down of the same tachyon that Gary's talking about.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, I guess that would have to follow from what I mean, if the duality is true, that must be true, because if the endpoint of the dynamical tachyon condensation is the black hole, and there was an alternative description of the black hole like this, it must be true. So. Indeed, maybe that's a way of saying it. Yeah. I wouldn't suggest that this is an easy way to describe the black hole. It sounds much harder than the black hole. But it was supposed to be interesting because it made the space-time look disconnected, made the target space still look disconnected.
So just to try and understand a slightly bigger picture, is a statement that these folded strings would correspond to the microstate geometries in some heuristic sense?
In some sense, yeah.
So all the microstates should have description outside the horizon in terms of having some folded strings ending on some defect?
Perhaps. I'm a little hesitant to say all the microstates because the only thing that was constructed here was the thermophile double. Like, the only thing that was constructed was a particular entangled combination of these microstates. And so I wouldn't actually know how to do string perturbation theory in a particular one of those microstates. So heuristically, yes, but more exactly, I'm not sure.
There was a paper by Horowitz and Polchinski that talked about the Gasso strings and described some kind of effective theory that included some tachyon condensate. And I was wondering whether this is related in some way to that paper. I don't remember the details of the paper, but it seemed in the similar spirit.
I think so. I think it's related a lot.
Maybe this is a vague question. So you've given a very specific example of ER equals EPR. Can you comment on how to maybe see this in a more general context for other states, perhaps? What is the prospect for doing that?
Yeah, sure. So, I think the answer to that depends on the details, and indeed in some cases you probably won't get any description like this that doesn't involve strong coupling where we don't know how to handle it. But maybe another case that might be interesting is if we imagine the same picture where this green line is some D brands. So that seems like it would arise rather naturally. So suppose we look at just the eternal black hole in ADS5 times S5. Okay. Now, could there be an alternative description where instead of having the connected geometry inside the horizon, you imagine we apply ADS CFT in pieces. So we use the gravity, the string theory description for large radius, like from the horizon out to the boundary. But then when you start to approach the horizon, you switch back to the n equals 4 super young Mills description. But that sounds like a funny way of saying that we shrink the S5 and put back the explicit stack of ND3 brands. So that's perhaps what this green line could represent. And so can there exist a description which looks like ADS5 times S5 asymptotically? But then as it comes down, let's talk about the Euclidean solution. So instead of having the Euclidean time circle cap off, as in the black hole, it ends at a circle where we put back the ND3 brands. Now that sounds hard to control because, well, either you'll be in the gravity regime or the regime where the D-brand description is good and it's kind of mixing them together. So that might be difficult, but maybe at large n but small lambda, such a description is possible. That would sort of be this kind of example. Maybe that's really the point of these folded strings. In these ADS3 background that we talked about, it's a pure NS background, so it's basically its constituent brain is not a brain; it's just the collection of strings. So that's why that you can end the space with this collection of strings. If we had something with Ramon-Ramon flux, you will want to end the space by the microscopic brains and so on. But in general, they will be the microscopic brains in a regime where they're very strongly coupled. I don't know any framework to describe it, but perhaps.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Okay, last question. Did you want to?
This is a vague question. See, if you look at black holes in ADS space and higher than ADS 3, and you look at plot the free energy of these things, you know, you've got thermal ADS, you've got black holes, big black holes, and then you've got small black holes. Okay, and so you've got two sort of local minima with a maximum in between. So in some sort of Landau-Ginzburg diagram, if you imagine drawing it as a function of some sort of order parameter, which would be a winding mode, roughly.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you've got a minimum, a maximum, and a minimum.
What is the direction you're plotting?
The direction I'm plotting is some vague Landau-Ginzburg direction. Okay, amplitude of winding mode or something like that.
Okay.
In Yang-Mills theory, it's condensate of the holonomies.
Uh-huh.
You can make it precise in some field theory. Uh-huh.
And the two saddles are supposed to be like the black hole and the thermal.
Thermal ADS, yeah. And then there's a maximum, which is a maximum because it's a small black hole. It's got negative specificity.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Okay. Now in ADS3, all black holes are positive specific heat. There's no analog of the small black hole. Okay.
Yes.
So this seems odd. It seems odd that you have two minima but no maxima in between.
Mm.
And I was wondering whether your singular configuration, your singular orbit fold might be the maximum. I was wondering if you could make this. Could you somehow compute the space-time free energy of the solution? For instance, to see that it goes above that of both.
Well,
Euclidean action, space-time Euclidean action.
Is there another possibility, which is just one of the orbit folds of the global ADS-3? Why aren't those the things that sit at the maximum?
The guys which shrink different winding, different cycles as filling, no, different filling out?
Suppose I just take global ADS-3 and do an orbit fold on the angle direction, so it makes a singularity in the middle. Martin Eck and others studied it a long time ago.
You know, the thing I like about
that looks a little bit, not like a small black hole exactly, but it has some point mass in the interior. And could that be the maximum?
It's possible, but you know, this whole space here is democratic among various cycles. I talked about just two cycles, right?
Yes.
But you could fill out, in Euclidean space, you could fill out various angle cycles.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So you'd like a maximum that either the many maxima, maybe that's what you're saying, but it would be nice if there was a democratic maximum. This guy looks very democratic because every cycle should.
Oh, I see. Yeah, this would then be that. I see, okay.
But I was wondering if you could somehow make that precise. Do a calculation for this theory that... Yeah, it's a big question.
That sounds interesting. Maybe we'll talk about it.
But. Actually, if you want to keep making it precise, we can have she set up while you're finishing. or
good.
We can take it offline.
Okay.
Okay, let's thank Daniel again.